What's up, everybody? This is The Drop. This is RJ. This is episode 6. The Drop's brought to you by Cash or Trade, the world's only social network where fans buy, sell, and trade tickets at face value. And Osiris is a media partner of Jambase, the premier online destination for fans of live music. You can read more about both of those guys in the show notes, guys and gals, of course. So I'm going to do a quick intro. There's only two segments here we're going to do on this week's The Drop. I think everyone enjoyed the preview of Touchdowns All Day last week, and that podcast is off to a great start. We have a lot more like that coming, so stay tuned. A lot more artist podcasts and band podcasts and lots of other stuff. So some people have asked, what's the difference between the audio version and the video version of The Drop? So the video version of The Drop is a weekly news roundup hosted by Amar Sastry. Of course, you can see that at youtube.com/osirismedia. The audio version of The Drop, and we've evolved this a little bit, is going to be festival updates and previews, artist interviews, and then a little bit of what's going on with Osiris. This week, we're going to bring you an interview about the High Sierra Music Festival done with Paige Clem, who's the director of marketing for the festival, and Lebo of ALO. So you'll hear that, hear about High Sierra. And then we're going to jump into a clip of Beyond the Pond, an Osiris podcast, an interview with Chris Forsythe. So those are the things you're going to hear this week. Because of timing this week, we couldn't do the sort of rundown that Nick and I have been doing, but we're going to do that. We're not going to bring you the news in those rundowns. Typically, we're going to talk about music we've seen and things that are interesting to us. So it's going to be different than the video version. The video is really a news roundup of music information. So hopefully that's helpful. And we're going to jump in a minute here, and just want to say thank you for tuning in and for, you know, evolving with us. Send us thoughts and feedback, OsirisPod on Facebook and Twitter. And we're going to jump into this interview with Paige and Lebo about High Sierra.
All right. I'm here with Dan Leibowitz, who's a musician with ALO and other projects. Hi, Dan. Thanks for joining.
Yeah, good to see you. Good to hear you, I should say.
And I'm also here with Paige Clem, who's the marketing director for High Sierra, and also is a musician who has some insights on this festival and what makes it great. So, Paige, thanks for joining this as well.
My pleasure. Thanks.
So, in the festival scene, that High Sierra is really kind of one of the longer running. It's the 29th annual this year, and that's crazy just because there's so many festivals that come and go, and the enduring ones are particularly interesting because obviously there's something that people want to come back for. But before we get into sort of what's happening now, what was the inspiration for starting the festival 29 years ago?
Sure. I'll jump in on that. You know, basically, I mean, that was what I think we started our first year was in 1991. And so it gets weird. We're in our 29th annual, which is not the 29th year, you know how that thing goes, but we've definitely been around for a long time. And at the time, you know, there were a lot of different festivals that were happening, certainly not nearly as many as there are today, but festivals were more kind of specific to rock or bluegrass or folk and that kind of thing. And the founders really wanted to try to create a festival that had more of an eclectic mix with many styles for people that are really passionate about music, but just sort of really were drawn to all different types. And it was really about having, you know, quality music, you know, more so than whether or not it all kind of fit together. And that's kind of what made it work. And so it ends up, you know, just being this really lovely eclectic mix of different things. And it's still like that today. We have, you know, we've got bluegrass and we've got reggae and we've got folk, and but it all kind of speaks well to this this particular vibe of just people that love good quality music.
That's really cool. And Dan, you guys have played a lot here. What's your take on that piece, or even maybe the next kind of question, and what keeps you coming back and what keeps people coming back?
Yeah, I feel like to me, because as someone who plays a ton of music festivals around the country, you know, one of the standout things about High Sierra is just like really the community around it. And kind of as Paige was saying, there are so many different styles of music. I think the common denominator they try to do is just put good music. But then the sort of X factor becomes the community that surrounds it. And I think it's one of those things where, you know, the sum of the whole is greater than the parts, because when you get that kind of community together and get the bands together, I know, like for us, like our High Sierra sets are always sets where we like spend a little extra time on the set list, or like learn that extra little thing, or try to get that extra thing on the theme, because it's one of those just real standout places where people are going to respond to that, and we respond to the people responding to that. And so it's, you know, it's just an elevating experience really all the way around.
It reminds me when Dan's talking about that. There was a few years back, right when our Facebook community was getting going, we did a fun little survey. I'm trying to see if I had the answers on it, but we asked people, like, if you could use one word to describe High Sierra, what would it be? And there were, different, epic and those kind of things. But the one word that like came out that showed up the most over and over again, that kind of led the theme, was home. And there's a lot of people that kind of have that feeling of like, this is where I get to go home. Oh, here it is. We did one of those little word things on it. Let me see what some of these other words on here, but that was a big one. Home, epic, magical, joyous, fun, family, it's pretty special.
It totally is. Yeah, it really does have that thing. And I mean, I assume like part of that is that it has so many years under its belt. But oddly, this is my 19th year going to be. And I can think even all the way back to the first one, that sense of the community vibe was really strong then too. That it made a big impression on me back then. It was the first festival I ever went to, and then started playing it shortly after that. So.
Wow.
Oh, that's nice.
That's really cool. And Lebo, you often play as, an artist who plays with a bunch of different bands. I think you sit in with people, or you have special guests, or Lebo and friends. And that's kind of gets to the point you were making earlier, just about collaboration and the community. Is it different than other festivals from your perspective in that way, in terms of just playing with other musicians?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I'll say is I feel like the whole there's a thing called the play shops, which differs from the regular part of the programming, where all the bands that are booked on the various stages that come and do their set and still have sit-ins and that kind of stuff too, that are unique to the festival. But then there's the music hall where they do the late nights, but during the daytime they do play shops in there. And it's play on words. It's like the idea is it's like workshops, so it's usually like a theme thing that musicians put together and get curated, and we work with the festival to put those together. But I feel like in some ways, I feel like that's like the heart of the festival happens in that room, at least for me in a way, because it's like there are so many musicians that I have become like great friends and great collaborators for me in my life that I've met in that room. Like literally, I can't even count how many over the years. Mm-hmm. We end up on a play shop together, and it's some sort of unique set of music for this theme thing. I mean, bands have started out of it, like our band that we had for a little while with me and Steve Adams and Dave Brogan from ALO, but also with Tim and Nikki Bloom and Scott Law. It was called Broke Down in Bakersfield, and that just started as we're like, oh, let's do a workshop on Bakersfield style country music, and we put a set list together and went and did it at the festival, and I'm like, oh wow, this is a band. And after that, we went and started touring and making records and stuff, and I mean, that's just one example. There's like so many examples of just
Nathan Moore had that project with the Slip and our Bar Brothers that definitely happened.
One of the really special parts of the festival happens in that room. I mean, the whole thing's special, but that's one of the unique things to me, is that play shop scene. It's a vibrant, like, it's all about collaboration and mixing and matching, and cool things come from it.
The thing that's special about that too is not to sound overly inflated about it, but it is like once in a lifetime moments. Each time it's different.
Exactly.
It's not, you can go and book a band and see a band on the main stage, and it's going to be a great set and that. But what happens in the play shops, it's always unique. Every year,
exactly,
it's going to be different. In fact, we're actually about to release, that's a good reminder and a good plug. We're about to release a video series that shows past play shops that have happened. We're going to kind of roll them out 1 week at a time, but we have a few years worth of them in high def, and we're going to be putting those out. But you can kind of see these, these really unique collaborations, and depending on what's going on that year, if somebody passed, there might be a big tribute around that. Or I know there was a year we had a couple of different just superstar females, and we put together Soul Sisters of High Sierra, and we've done just really kind of weird, quirky things. I mean, the themes of them can really dig deep and become really fun. And then I think it's fun just from an artist standpoint. I've participated a couple of times in different ways, but then watching other bands come in that might like push an artist a little bit outside of their comfort zone in a moment. Like, ooh, like maybe I haven't met these people before. You meet backstage, mm-hmm, and you kind of have a sense of what you're going to do. And so it, it creates an extra level of excitement, I think, both for the bands and for the fans, just to see what's going to happen. So Lebo's right. Those are really, you know, these kind of really special things that happen in the middle of the day. You never really know what it's going to be, but they're generally very well loved.
And Lebo, I know, I think the first time that ALO played was in 2005. I think according to the internet, but sometimes the internet's wrong. But so you should tell me if that's wrong. But it seemed like around that time, the festival turned from something that was, you know, somewhat smaller and maybe more regional into like just a huge festival with so many more artists. Do you guys have insight into like what happened, if it was just kind of gaining popularity, or if there was like one particular year?
Yeah, I can speak to that. Right around 2000, you know, the millennia, we had a relocation, and that was kind of a game changer for us. We've been in Bear Valley for a couple of years, and it was this crazy anomaly where we were just like a month or two out from the festival, and there was still snow at the site. And we had to go up and evaluate what was going on and find an alternate location. And that was when we found the fairgrounds in Quincy. And that ended up, you know, where we relocated, and it ended up being a really good fit. And that became our permanent home in 2000. And when we moved there, that afforded us the opportunity to have this like much bigger infrastructure and multiple stages and a place to put late nights on site and just really expand the overall offerings. And then with this, you know, increased room and bigger stages, we were able to, you know, we had a larger capacity and we were able to attract higher profile acts. And that was kind of what set the stage for these past, you know, what, close to two decades now.
Yeah. So actually my first one was in 2000. That was the first one I played. And it was first year in Quincy, I guess. But the first time I went in 1999, and like I said, it was the first festival I went to. So I went then and was like blown away, of course, just by the whole scene. And we, you know, busked around on the stage. We used to have 10 courts at the old site. So we did that. We play all night acoustic. But yeah, my first one playing was 20, so that's why this year is 19 years.
Wow. Okay. Cool. Wow. Thanks for that. That's cool. Yeah. Well, I know that this year the lineup is you know, eclectic and big as it has been the past few years. But curious, you know, I could name some of the artists, but there are too many to name. But just it's such a diverse group of bands, from, you know, Del McCurry and Grisman to Jen Hartswick to Jim James and Dispatch and Umphreys and Green Sky and dozens of others. How is this year shaping up? Is there anything particular you all are observing about this lineup or looking forward to?
I've had this little obsession with Too Many Zoos since I saw their first video years ago. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but I remember when I first kind of started working full time for the festival, I was like, they were kind of blowing up with the Subway videos. But so I'm excited just to see them on the side of the country and see what they're like in a live performance, because I watch their videos so much. I'm sure you're familiar with their fun jam. So that's one I'm personally excited about. The other thing too, just to kind of go back to the collaborative aspect of it, I feel like, I mean, we always have cool things happening and things happen in the play shop, but this year has so many lineups on the bill that are just like cool artists getting more great artists together. And so Stanton, Lawrence Garrick have got this project that they've done a couple of times now, and they're bringing Scott Metzger and Robert Walter and Andy Hess with this Emerald Quintet that I think they may be playing at Jazz Fest right now. And then the Sisters of the Strawberry Moon with Luther Dickinson and Birds of Chicago and Chard Thomas. Like, Birds of Chicago were there last year. They're lovely musicians and people, and so they get to see this collaboration going on. And then Reed Genar is there, and I mean, there's a bunch of people that are bringing, you know, these bands together with these people that you see in all these different kind of configurations that I feel like is just really exciting to get to see. So those are the ones that are jumping out at me. And I'm also a huge Rainbow Girls fan, and I'm really excited to see them on the lineup this year because they have just such a sweet, soulful film.
I feel like, yeah, the lineup's looking awesome. I love how just when you thought it was done, there's more.
Right.
Announcement. I was stoked to see that the festival added Dawes. I love those guys. They're cool. And kind of a little different than some of the other stuff on the festival too. Yeah. And of course, like all those other ones you mentioned, and yeah, getting back into the collaborative thing, on the stages, you know, not in the play shop room, with Reed Jenner, I've been playing with him, and I'm going to be part of his project for this, you know, besides being there with ALO. and stuff. But I'm excited for that because that's going to be unique too. Because besides the usual thing we've been doing with you know, Scott Metzger and Danny Eisenberg and John Lefesse and Dave Diamond, it's also we're gonna add Jay Lane to it. So it'll be double drums, and that project hasn't been done that way before. So that'll be a unique double drum take on it, and it's always fun adding Jay Lane into something. So that should be fun.
You just did really cool. That with him and Brooklyn Bowl, right?
Yeah, we just did an East Coast tour with that same lineup, but with one drummer, and it's a ton of fun.
Yeah, I saw some of those videos. It was really great.
Yeah, he's such a great songwriter, and his whole trip from, you know, Strange Folk and Assembly of Dust is awesome. And now he kind of started this new project, Conspire to Smile, where he wrote an album, album's worth of material, and did some covers as well on it. And, you know, the whole idea of bringing joy and some that some would interpret as dark times, he's bringing the joy and put a band together for it. And it's been a ton of fun. We did a run on the West Coast where we did Great American Music Hall and played up in Humboldt. And then, yeah, just a couple of weeks ago, we did an East Coast run, Brooklyn Bowl, and played up in Boston and that kind of stuff. So psyched to bring it to High Sierra. It's a really cool project and really fun for me because I love playing with Scott Metzger. And we've known each other over the years. And actually, backing up again, the first time I ever played with him was I'd met him somewhere or other, but he came and sat in with my band at a late night a few years back at High Sierra. And we had a fun time playing. Yeah. We've got to find a way to play some more. And then some time went by and we had it. And then Reed put this project together and we both played on the record. So when he started putting the live band together, he called both of us up. And it's really fun because the tunes are great tunes and great melodies and all that. But there's a lot of room built into the tunes for me and Scott to sing together and stuff too. So it's a lot of fun.
So for people who are considering coming, Paige, what you said home earlier, what's the other, like, what's your kind of summary of why people come back and why people should come check out High Sierra if they haven't before?
Thanks for asking. You know, it's interesting. Lebo alluded to this a little bit at the beginning. It's really hard to put it into words, but there is something that it's like a recipe. It's sort of like, yeah, we have the site, and there's this beautiful site that's in the Sierras. It's summertime. The snow's melted. The tall piney trees are, you know, setting the backdrop. It's definitely warm, but you get, like, you know, good kind of summertime vibes. And so you have this beautiful setting and this lovely drive, even getting to the property, like winding through the mountains. And if you go along the Feather River and the canyons, it's like this sort of journey to get to this space. And you get there and you set up. And then, you know, the festival figures out all these bands to bring and that, you know, kind of cover the gamut of all these different genres that we've talked about that are all kind of quality musicians. And you've got this level of, like, familiar bands that bring you comfort because you know their stuff and you're excited to see what they do. And then this piece of, like, there's this tier or this chunk of bands that I don't really know who they are, but we trust that it's going to be good because it just always is. And so you kind of come with this excitement and anticipation of discovering something new while also knowing you're going to see stuff that you love already. And then you get there and then we have, you know, some costume themes for people that are into that. And so there's kind of this playful, fun thing that comes with planning and prepping for it. And different people have their different setup on, like, where they like to go on site and their different camps that, you know, are there, and everybody gets there and sets it all up. And it's like, there's all these different pieces. There's the food that you kind of rely on and some of the, you know, the craft vendors that come back each year. And we have this cool, like, wine and beer tasting thing every day called the Swirl. And it's just all these little kind of regular things that you can rely on that are part of this recipe. And then you put it all together and it's sort of like you just set the stage for all of that. And then July 4th weekend rolls around and the gates open. And then this other thing happens that you can't really put into words, but you have to have all those pieces there. But it's this like positive, energetic, kind of peaceful, happy, like, home feeling that happens mm-hmm. for the people that go there. And it's available to everyone because it's not like you have to have been doing this for years and years to be able to get it. It's like people come every year for the first time and are like, oh my God, now I know why people have talked about this festival for so long. It's this, like, kind of intangible thing that is a part of all those different pieces. And so it's really just like, you know, the smiles are abundant. Like, everybody just kind of gets there and you relax and you get into this zone of the space of kind of exciting but calm thing that happens all weekend long that just really, you know, for a lot of people, it's like how they restore for the whole year, you know? So that's my take on it.
That's awesome. Yeah. Maribo, what about you?
Yeah, I totally feel all those things that Paige said. I was chuckling when she said the tier of unknown bands because I started out there. my first time there.
Right.
We were literally just starting. I think we just started doing a tiny bit of touring and High Sierra brought us in, and you know, the rest is history with that for us. It was needless to say, a really fun time. But yeah, I feel like all that stuff that Paige was saying, it really just boils down to this X factor thing that if you really can't put into words, you just have to go there and experience it. And it really is. And from the music perspective, the only thing I can add that is that musicians play their music and there's a range of how performances go. And there are things that lead you to a better performance usually, and things like being comfortable and being in a good space. And I feel like High Sierra really they kudos to the production team and everything, because they make all musicians feel really welcome and comfortable and everything's all set up nice. But then add that with this crowd that's so warm and receptive. I think it just really brings the good performances out. That's been my experience, you know, like, yeah, I think it just pulls out good performances from people. And that's kind
that's
of what,
really nicely said,
what
yeah.
we want. Yeah, that's what we want. And as a music fan, I'll say the same thing too. Like when I go to see a band, like you can tell when you're like, oh, they're cool, but I bet that wasn't their best show. Or you can tell when like, ooh, some special stuff just happened. And I feel like High Sierra's got a really high batting average with that.
Nicely said.
So it's cool.
Yeah,
yeah, your awesome. Odds are good. It's a good place, good one to place your bets on.
All right. Well, for people who haven't checked it out, check out. You can go to highsierramusic.com. The festival is July 4th through 7th. And Lebo and Paige, thanks so much for coming and chatting with us about it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks, RJ.
All right. Hope everyone enjoyed that interview with Paige and Lebo. It was fun to talk to them. If you haven't yet, you can check out the High Sierra Music Festival at highsierramusic.com. All right, now we're going to jump into an interview with Chris Forsyth from the guys at Beyond the Pond. So Chris Forsyth is a guitarist, of course, and they talk in the full episode, which we'll link to, about a lot of Chris's influences and his playing. But this little clip talks a little bit about his work with Richard Lloyd, who's the founding member of the band Television, and talks about kind of his influence on Chris and what he learned from him, as well as there's a little Fish conversation in here and a little Velvet Underground conversation. So this will give you a flavor for what Beyond the Pond does, and you can check those guys out in the show notes as well. Enjoy this brief snippet, the conversation with Chris Forsyth.
One thing I'd wanted to ask you about is often when I try to describe your music to other people, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind, I always think it sounds a lot like Television. If Television cut their teeth at the Fillmore East, as opposed to like CBGB. I know there was a time when you were taking like lessons from Richard Lloyd. I mean, I'd just be curious to know a bit more about that, because I know he had a bit of a reputation for like being a taskmaster as regards to students.
Well, you know, it's funny because he actually did cut his teeth at the Fillmore East, at least as a listener.
Like he grew up. He went and saw Hendrix there, right?
I mean, he saw everybody there. We talked about this when I studied with him. I studied with him for about a year and a half in the late 90s. I think it was like 98, 99, something like that. Okay. And we talked about that, and it definitely. It was a huge influence on him. You know, he grew up in the village, and he saw everybody there. You know, I mean, Hendrix and Led Zeppelin and the Dead and Allman Brothers and, you know, and on and on and on, the Who. Like, I mean, he saw all those, you know, classic rock innovators, you know, at you know, ground zero, like at the place where it was happening. But studying with him, you know, completely. I mean, he taught me how music works. So before that, I mean, I'd been playing for like 10 years before that, but I was self-taught I'd taught myself or learned from magazines or learned from friends, but without any kind of methodology or any kind of coherence, really. And so I kind of knew, like, oh, if I did this with my fingers, that worked. And if I did this with my fingers, that worked. But I had no idea how they were connected or why they were connected or, you know, anything about music. Couldn't read music, didn't understand any of it. And so he sort of, you know, broke me down to like the total fundamentals. And, you know, the way that he plays or the way that he taught me to think about music is still the way that I think about it. And so, yeah, I mean, anytime anybody says, oh, it sounds like television, I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, the guy taught me how to play the guitar. So, you know, and they were always, you know, an absolute favorite band of mine when I, you know, from the time I was a teenager, I probably discovered Television through REM probably in like the late 80s or, yeah, probably like the late 80s or 1990 or something like that, because, you know, they would cover their songs and talk about them and stuff. So, oh, check that out. And then, oh, yeah, I can see
what
that.
REM? I'm just trying to think, because I'm a big REM fan. Did they cover
some See No Evil?
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I'm certain that's how I discovered Television. Just like that's how I discovered the Velvet Underground through REM. But yeah, at one point, you know, in the late 90s, I realized I was being honest with myself at one point and being like, I don't really know what the hell I'm doing. And I was at a rehearsal room in the East Village, and Richard just had like a, you know, a poster up with like, you know, the bottom of his phone number and a bunch of tabs on the bottom.
Like, you Dan know? Smith will teach you how to play guitar. Except
yes, exactly. It said Richard Lloyd learned the, you know, cosmic principles and, you know, skeleton key of music or something like that. And I was like, oh, I think that's what I need. So
that's quite an amazing opportunity.
Yeah.
It's funny, you being introduced to Velvet Underground and Television through REM, for me, those two bands were directly introduced to me through Phish. It was the 98 Phish Halloween show where they played Loaded. And I think probably 75% of the Phish fan base discovered the Velvet Underground that night.
Something that REM and Phish definitely have in common, turning on tons of people to the Velvet Underground.
Right. It was, they'd played like three Halloween shows or three cover album shows, and then they come out and they played Loaded, and a lot of the fan base goes, huh? But, you know, it's become a favorite album for a lot of people within the fan base, and the song Rock and Roll has become a huge, jamming song for them. But
I've totally seen that. Yeah.
Have you?
Mm-hmm.
But in 2009, Phish played a Halloween show, and they basically put up on a website like 50 album covers that were possible albums that they were going to cover that year. And then they killed one or two off each day. And you whittled it down until they played Exile on Main Street. But Marquee Moon was one of those album covers. And I remember looking at it and being like, never heard this, but I kind of made it a goal that October. I was like, I'm going to listen to every record that I've never heard that's on here. A, because the band might play it and I want to know what they're playing, but also, if this is where their influences are, I've got to dive into this. And that was, you know, the first time I threw that record on, I was like, this doesn't sound like punk music as I've been told punk music is. Like, I can't believe I'm hearing music that's not jam band, that's actually being stretched out the way that it is. It was a huge revelation.
Well, totally. That's the thing also that I realized when I met Richard, because of course, you know, the official press history of Television, which is not untrue, is that, you know, they were the first, you know, quote, punk band in New York. They built the stage literally at CBGB's. But when I met Richard, I was like, this guy is like totally a hippie and like kind of like a just a curious, like, you know, kind of cosmic vision quest guy who's like, was not like, hey man, I know three chords, that's all I need. Right. He was like, I want to know as much as I can possibly know about music and how it works and how the guitar works. And oh, if three chords is what this song needs, and I'll use three right. chords. I won't use more, you know, like I'm trying to get to the essence here. And, that was definitely a big, that was, I mean, it was a huge lesson that I took from him. And I think that that was also, you know, whatever, there's been some talk lately about this idea of like, you know, indie jam.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, television is arguably the first
That's
one.
Totally,
you know?
True.
You know, Lester Bangs, the famous, you know, punk oriented rock critic in the 70s, moves to New York in the late 70s from Cleveland, where he's heard all about this thing happening or punk rock, and he sees television and he's like, what, they sound like the Grateful Dead. And he means that dismissively, right? You know, because he's like, I'm like a punk guy. And it's like, yeah, that's kind of true.
Working with Richard Lloyd at that point, had you read the book Please Kill Me?
Oh yeah. Okay. For sure. No, I mean, I knew what I was walking into, like,
all right,
mythically, for sure. I mean, I was a super deep television fan already at that point. Like, I'd probably listened to Marquee Moon, you know, as much or more than any other record that I'd ever listened to. So I was thrilled to have this opportunity to sit down with him, you know?
Yeah. The one thing from reading that book, which I didn't realize until I had read it, was when he talks about when, I think, television, they hear the Cars for the first time.
They think, oh yeah.
Okay. This is us.
And he's like, uh-oh, it's over.
Yeah. Right.
He's like, they kind of look like us. They kind of sing like us.
But it's commercial.
Right. But they also kind of sound like Roxy Music or something. Like, they have the synthesizers and like the pop hooks and uh-oh. Yeah. And they were on the same label. That's the other thing. They were also on Elektra. And they were like, uh-oh, the company is going to switch focus. Like, they're not going to be interested in us anymore.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. That's where we're going to leave you this week. If you like what you hear, give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It only takes a second. Or wherever you listen to podcasts, you can find us on Spotify and other podcast distribution services. So let us know what you think. And thanks for tuning in. And we'll see you all next week.